In this episode, you're going to discover 7 clever ways to inject your sales message into helpful, value-building content that your prospects actually want to consume.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery. Brought to you by Wirebuzz.
What's happening? All right, let's talk today. We're going to be talking about a bunch of clever ways to be leveraging your sales message into your helpful content. And one of the reoccurring trends on this show is the idea that helpful is the new viral. Now, what started as a way of standing out is now becoming a necessity for results-oriented marketers. You know what I've learned in life? I learned this from just observing men and women and interacting. Girls give confidence to guys. Women have always had a way of making their men more confident. And smart content that's helpful, it does something very similar. It gives confidence to your prospects that you're legit. And whenever I think about helpful content, I'm always thinking about Dr. Wayne Dyer's Power of Intention, which his philosophy, it's really pure and simple. The law of attraction is you don't attract what you want, you attract what you are. So be helpful, be a source of very valuable information that lifts up people's lives, and magically, they will see you as having that power to lift them up and to take their business to another level. Think about the power that your helpful information can provide to others. You know, you can see that helpful information, you can be getting it out to people through SEO or paid advertising, social media. Those are all channels that have become reliant on helpful content to get ROI. And gone are the days of sending cold traffic to a sales page or blogging about your product or your service or even asking people to sign up for your email list to get product information or a newsletter. There's simply too much competition in 2017, and your prospects are always asking themselves, what's in it for me? And I know you do this. You've got to start looking at yourself as a case study. So as you're going through the internet and you sign up for somebody's email list, what was it that pushed you over the edge, right? It was the offer of value, something that was so valuable that you had to put in your email address and click send or submit in order to get into that bucket, right? And look at every marketing tactic that way. If you watch a video and there's a button to go to their homepage, what was it that made you do that? And then dissect that, because that'll help you be a smarter marketer in the process. You know, as Gary Vee says, marketing is quickly turning into a war of attention. And that's one of the reasons why we love video so much. It's easier to consume. So it gets longer attention spans, right? You hold people longer, but even videos need to make a promise of value if you want your prospects to hit the play button and sit through your message. Being directly salesy, it has its time and its place, but that's typically further down the sales process. It's not right at the beginning, and it's not at first introduction. A rule of thumb for me is always thinking about yourself in a bar scenario. If somebody approaches you of the opposite sex, if that's how you roll, and they go in for a quick close, it's automatically a red flag. Well, maybe not for you, but for me, it's a red flag, right? And sales is the same way. You need to develop a relationship before you can ask. Do the same thing. You know, most marketers know they need to be creating helpful content, but the problem that I'm seeing is a lack of effective execution. People are either too far away from their product, which doesn't help your business, or they're too salesy too soon. It's a delicate balancing act that many marketers are struggling with. So on today's show, we're going to be discussing several different strategies for creating helpful content that also helps you sell, right? That's the whole goal. And that's why I'm joined right now by Wirebuzz's Director of Strategy, Marcus Krieg. Yo, yo.
Yo, yo.
You know what I've realized is no matter what I say, yep, you're going to echo it back.
I do it on purpose.
Okay, good.
See, you have your shtick, so then I get to have mine.
You get to flow on it, right? Okay, cool. All right, Marcus, I think it's a foregone conclusion, but do you agree that people go in and start selling too soon?
I would say 98% of businesses immediately go straight to straightforward sales language as opposed to figuring out, which is admittedly harder. It's harder to teach and then deliver some of that essential sales message in that context.
When you and I are speaking, I notice a very common question that comes up often, and it is, well, you know, guys, if we're creating content, how's that even valuable to us? I mean, we really need to be selling. We're not like a production company, and we don't create content. We need to be selling, right? Comes up all the time, and we're always advising people, if you start selling, it feels icky to the recipient. But you still need to be top of mind. You still need to be a thought leader, providing them valuable information. So the way you do that without ever feeling icky is be helpful.
Right. And so there's, on one side of the spectrum, you have the marketers who are only traffic focused. And so they decide, okay, this is a topic area that might be relevant to my target customers, but for which my product or service is not directly relevant, right? So there's not a good way to inject your sales or marketing message into that content. Oftentimes we'll see things like, you know, 5 ways to do blank. And then there's nothing that builds up, introduces the problem that your product solves. There's nothing that alludes to the solution that your product will provide. And so that content has very little value. It might drive traffic, but the traffic you're driving is not relevant.
Okay, now when you say that content, what you're meaning is the 5 ways to do blank isn't valuable as a bridge to get somebody to buy if you don't have a road leading up to it before.
Right. You have to, you know, we had that topic, a couple weeks back about content sequencing and understanding that your content needs to create a linear path to purchase. So if people are not aware that they have a problem, then you need to start your marketing message there with helpful content that introduces the problem.
And every product's different, so everybody starts from a slightly different spot. So like Marcus, who runs our strategy team, if it was one size fits all and every product in the world had a very similar model, we would just have a template and it would be like, bang, bang, this is what you do, right? But some people are in emerging markets, some are in established, some have a disruptive product. They all need to be, their target customer needs to be educated and introduced from a slightly different way.
Right. And, you know, so that's just one side of this spectrum, because as you mentioned, it's a balancing act. You can go the other direction and be way too salesy, way too soon. And this is that classic example of the business. Right. You know, walking up to a girl in a bar and asking her to marry you. In a business context, blogging about your product or service, or creating only videos that are directly salesy, that aren't value building, that aren't written for you, the intended viewer, to be independently valuable. And so this is something that comes up for us all the time, because yes, we make a lot of videos in that sales context, because most businesses have a glaring hole in their business strategy where they don't have that content. But as we talk about all the time, you know, we're optimizing oftentimes from the bottom of the funnel towards the top.
We like to plunge to the bottom of the funnel.
Right, because you have prospects who are already ready to buy if you can simply transfer a little bit more information to them. So that's where that fits into the process. But as you start to expand the scope of who you're driving to your website and you're trying to increase your lead flow, increase your deal sizes, increase the number of people who are simply in your funnel in general, you have to start reaching for people who may not be aware that your solution exists and they don't know to look for it. And that means that talking about your product in that context to those people could not be more over their head. Right. They just don't care. So you will never get their attention. So as you start to expand who you're trying to attract and sell to, you need to instead think about what are the desires or problems that those problem unaware or solution unaware customers, what are those desires? What are those problems? Because you need to then position your message based on something that they already value. So that means valuable, helpful content, but that valuable, helpful content also needs to bridge some kind of specific gap. Does it introduce the problem that your product solves so that they might value a solution in the first place? We call those demand gen videos. Does it introduce your solution and how it solves the problem? Oftentimes, those are explainer videos or testimonials or case studies. Lots of different ways that you can do that. But you need to make sure that you have even one level up higher than that, content that you can just push out into the world that people actually want to share that doesn't feel like it's about you.
Up at that content level, okay? Up at the helpful content, early awareness stage content. The reason I love that area so much is I'm not selling, right? I'm just being Todd Thought Leader in digital marketing. And I know I've shared with you, but for the listener who's devoted that might be sitting on the fence, whenever I put out a new video, a new Todd's Tip, and it really only happens with video, okay? Whenever I put out a new video, I get people that are already in my funnel that reach out to me saying, hey, my business needs X, Y, and Z. I think you're the guy to help, or you should meet my cousin. She's launching this. You guys would be a perfect team to help them. And I've turned, those people are already in my funnel. And I didn't know they were in my funnel. They're part of my referral network, right? And they're just pulling people in because I'm creating helpful content that feels authoritative, right? And in doing so, I'm staying top of mind, and then they introduce us. We just had one in an email that went out last week. We got two companies that saw it. It was helpful content. One got introduced to us. The other one was a existing client that we hadn't heard from for a while. But because we had a reason to reach out with something helpful that would make their business more valuable, they reached out and said, perfect timing. We actually were thinking about X, Y, and Z. Can you help us do that with a series of videos? Boom. That's the value.
Right. You're demonstrating subject matter expertise. You're demonstrating value before you're asking for something, right? You're giving a preview of what it's like to work with you. We're always talking about creating that ownership experience, giving people a example of results before you offer them your solution. So that is obviously something you can do throughout the entire customer journey. But the most important thing is that at least you have some top of funnel content that you can use to bridge people who don't know that they need you yet, right? Like, that's just so important. And you don't have to even reference yourself. You just have to allude to solutions, right? If your solution is very complex, then you can give snippets of the solution.
Just something digestible.
Something digestible, something immediately actionable. Show them some good positive result.
I'd say ours is complex.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we do a lot of simple little snackable, digestible things that keeps us top of mind, but also shows our authority.
Right. We shave off we're always talking about delivering on the promise of value that you're making, but we can't promise in a podcast episode that you're going to learn everything about YouTube SEO, an example. Like, it's just not going to happen in one episode because it's too big. But what we can do in an episode is talk about effective headline writing to a level of depth that people can actually take effective action.
All right, so let's make good on our promise. Today, we're going to be talking about the 7 clever ways to inject your sales message into helpful content. And I know that you and I are under-promise, over-deliver guys. So I'm willing to guess we might even have a bonus one.
If we can think of one.
Okay. So with that said, let's start off with strategy number one. It's splintering off pieces of your offer. So give me a Wirebuzz example.
Yeah, sure. So the idea here is that you have something that you are trying to offer on the back end of the funnel, a service, a product. In our case, we might do YouTube video creation and management. This would be more like a retainer style project because YouTube requires ongoing production. So if we wanted to get someone to say, raise their hand and say, hey, Wirebuzz, I would love to work with you guys. Will you manage my YouTube channel and make our videos? We're not going to get that sale out the gate because we're talking about a retainer. We're talking about, you know, production. You know, these are not, it's not creating 2 blog posts a month, right? This is a bigger ask. And so we need to warm people up first. We can't just go straight to the offer. So then we, you know, working back from the bottom of the funnel towards the top, we might shave off a parcel of that solution and maybe create an ebook on YouTube SEO, which we did. And then we then create a whole bunch of top of funnel content that drives people towards that ebook that then results in an email autoresponder sequence that drives people towards the offer. So then that top of funnel content is all actionable, helpful information that also makes the solution hard. The solution is hard because there's a lot that you need to know. It requires a ton of experience. And all of that top of funnel content is demonstrating our expertise, but it's also making the problem bigger, right? The more challenging it is to get all of the benefits of your solution on your own, the better positioned you are to make your solution an easy button for people.
So the reason this works, people are interested in free content, are also interested in the gated content, the lead magnet that you offer. You're simply making bigger promises at each step of the funnel. And you can also pair this technique with some of the others that we're going to be addressing later on in this podcast. Cool?
Yeah.
You cool with it?
Yeah, I'm cool with it.
All right. So strategy number two, by the way, those elements that Marcus just mentioned are just Wirebuzz examples. What are the ones for your business, right? You got to be thinking about that tactically. When somebody approaches us, we start nerding out on the tactical elements and what the value offer is for their target customer. You need to start doing the same for yours. And in doing so, you're going to find that you can easily break these down. That they're just like a gateway drug. They're gateway topics you can pull people into your funnel with.
Right. And so you have core offer. You take a tiny sliver off of your core offer you make, but that has the same kind of promise.
Yeah.
Right? Because the people who like that lead magnet or ebook or mini course or whatever it is that you position that content as are going to then probably be relevant to your main offer. And then you then sliver off part of the lead magnet, the content offer, the gated offer. And then you create a whole bunch of top of funnel content that you can run ads to, that you can put on your blog, that you can put on podcasts, that you can put on YouTube videos, however you want to package or repackage that content. And it all drives people to the same lead magnet and then to the same email autoresponder sequence that puts people, that matriculates buyers.
All right, that's strategy number one, splintering off pieces of your offer. We gave you some Wirebuzz examples, some very smart tactical ways to look at your own business. Let's jump in to strategy number two, which is create a mini course related to your offer. It's something that Wirebuzz did. We, in a past episode, we told you about how our video mini course on how to guarantee your videos generate ROI, which is free to the listeners of this podcast at wirebuzz.com/ROI, can how that mini course gave us a 10x increase in our engagement, right? A super big win. Why does something like that work, Marcus?
Well, first of all, there's the amount of content that people are willing to sit through when you position something as a mini course, right? In a standalone video, a standalone blog post, you have to make smaller offers of value because the content has to be consumable. Very few people are going to binge read a 5,000 or 10,000 word ebook in a day, but 5,000 words transferred to video is actually not that overwhelming for someone to sit through. So especially if you break it up over a series of days. So for starters, it's just how much information you're able to communicate because you're tying several pieces of content together. Again, the content sequencing episode on the podcast here really broke down how we use sequencing. So that's a big part of this. But the other reason why it works super well is that it gives you an opportunity to teach your framework for repeated success inside the context of that mini course. And so you're telling people the strategy, right? Oftentimes, you're not getting super tactical in a mini course. You're just delivering the broad strokes so that people can take their own expertise, their own knowledge, their own business, and layer in those details on top of your framework. But obviously, with a framework, there is definitely a gap, right? Because executing that framework oftentimes requires either a lot of work or a lot of experience, right? So in the case of Wirebuzz, it's both, right? When we're selling to a customer, if they want to go out and execute a video campaign at the same level of quality that we can with the same kind of results, that's a lot of experience to catch up
right
on. And so you create a gap in, yeah, I understand the value and I understand what the framework is, so you've indoctrinated them into your way of doing things, but then it's hard, Right. And at the end, it becomes clear, hey, look, this is hard. And then you get to position yourself again as the easy button, as the solution to the challenging part. Because you've already offered the value that people need in order to feel like they can take effective action, but it's hard.
So I'm kind of a pathetic home handy guy, right? And we purchased our home like 10 years ago. Whoever put in that toilet in the master bedroom put in a toilet that had like a turbo plunger. It was like, right? And in the middle of the night, if you had to get up and use the bathroom, it was better than you go to the other side of the house and use one because you're going to wake your spouse up. Uh-huh. Just way too intense. But when we went to sell that home, that toilet had a little leak. Drip, drip, drip. And we would turn the fan on. But when we went to sell it, we had to fix it. So when we opened up the back thing, and I know this because this is why I didn't fix it in the first place, the actual turbo thing was inside of the tank was discontinued. So I watched videos online, and I found a dude that taught you how to fix these things, right? And yet it was hard, and I couldn't do it on my own. There was a gap between what he taught and what I could do, so I had to hire him. It's exactly the example, right?
That's exactly how it is. And so, yes, someone who is going to take the time and the effort and try to learn and fail as they get to your level of expertise, you've given them enough, right? You have to fulfill the promise of the offer, right? And in this case, that offer for us is learn how to make videos that you can get ROI on. Right? So here you're in terms of deciding what the mini course should be about, it should either be about teaching your framework, which is exactly what Wirebuzz did, or it could be a splintering, right? So you might have like a big product that does lots and lots of different things. Example that comes to mind here is HubSpot. They have landing page builders, they have A/B testing, they have websites, they have reports and dashboards, they have all this stuff. But different people are going to value different product sets, different features. And so for them, they might splinter off and create a series of content around how to build effective landing pages and copywriting and form optimization and all of these things that are related to the landing page solution. And then they might get people to opt into an ebook with best practices for landing page design or a template that you can use on your website without needing to purchase the software, or something that gets you further through the funnel and demonstrates a high degree of interest in that feature set. And then you could then bring them through and try to sell them the software, in this case HubSpot, but with an emphasis on the landing page feature set. Right. So you can use splintering to do this. You could also use something like a proven formula, like product launch formula, which was popularized by Jeff Walker. And that's a three-step video series that you use to bring people through a specific journey.
Oh, I love that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
By the end of it, I'm like, dude, I need that.
Right. And he has a specific series of steps you take people through in video one, video two, and video three. So it's a three-part framework. It solves problems for different types of businesses. It's not necessarily better or worse than splintering. It's just a different way of executing a mini course. You also have what you would call an attractive character sequence, which is what the Wirebuzz sequence was. So the attractive character sequence can be adapted to also teach a framework, right? So that, like, a basic underlying strategy. But what's great about an attractive character sequence is that it also is designed to build rapport with your lovable expert, which in our case is the one and only Todd.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, Marcus. This kind of goes back to one of our central philosophies here as a company. You don't have to be the smartest in your industry, you have to be the most resourceful. And so as you're hearing Marcus talk about the different frameworks, all we're doing is borrowing frameworks that have already been proven and been pressure tested in the market of ideas to generate the best results. And if you want to get access to Wirebuzz's case study on how to 10x engagement with a content series like our mini course, you can get access to that by going to wirebuzz.com/75. And on that landing page, you're going to see all the show notes, but you're also going to get a conversation in audio of Marcus and I talking about how we executed this and what the experience was like for me as the attractive character in that video. I walked into the studio and all of the 5 videos in the mini course were loaded into the teleprompter. Bam. I walked in, read the teleprompter. I went through each script maybe 4 or 5 times. Done. Out. And that's something that takes our expertise and puts it on autopilot every day for people to go and look at. Super cool.
Yep.
Great idea. All right, so let's talk about strategy number 3. These are case studies, and I just dropped a case study.
Oh, yes, you did.
So we dropped a case study while talking about case studies. Let's talk about the Wirebuzz example, and I'll let you take this. And by the way, I know on my notes right here, it mentions a client's name.
That was for recall? Just for internal notes.
Okay.
Not to be mentioned.
Not to be mentioned out loud. That's right. Why I saw it. I pumped the brakes.
And then you're like, whoa, I'm going to lob this one over.
Because yeah, I was like, I know that you have greater clarity on it than me. So Marcus, talk to me about this case study.
Sure. So this was, and we've mentioned this a few times on the podcast, but it's the case study of a client in a health space. Where they were trying to create a public service announcement for the public. And they went out and they spent $50,000+ on a video that they were going to run as an ad on YouTube.
I hate this story. It makes me feel so awkward.
It's cringeworthy.
It makes me cringe, yeah.
It's cringeworthy. And so this our client came to us with this video, and they, you know, she'd been consuming some of our content, knew that we were experts.
I've known her for years.
Right. And so she knew that we knew what we were doing.
That we're the rock stars.
But for some reason, she still decided to go with a production studio for her video, which is a really common thing for a lot of these traditional brands where they feel more comfortable working with a production studio because of the sort of recency bias. They're used to the fact that, you know, TV commercials were made by these people. They've been running ads on television for a long time,
but
so there's comfort.
I think TV ads should be created by TV people. I mean, let them do it. That's their universe that they know. But they were using this PSA online
right. And
couldn't figure out why it was generating results. And do you mind me just sharing where I come into this story?
Sure.
I get a phone call. I see it's her name, and I've been giving her advice for years, and I picked up the phone, and she's whispering. She's like, "Todd, hey, can we talk?" And I'm like, yeah, what's going on? And she goes, "We just spent $50,000 or $60,000 on a video, and I think I might get fired over it because it's not converting anybody. Can you take a look at this video and hopefully help resurrect it, because I think they're going to let me go if I don't figure out how to get this thing working again." I'm telling you, it made me so sad because I watched the video while I was on the phone with her. Then I sent a message to Marcus, and I was like, "Dude, check this video out. It's not getting conversion. Any idea why?" And the reason I said it kind of snarky like that to Marcus is because it took them, I don't know, Marcus, 25 seconds to provide anything of value on the screen.
And the first word was not spoken until 22 seconds in.
And literally, people were gone. And Marcus and I, when I walked over to his office, I said, "So what do you think about the video?" And he's like, "It's kind of obvious, right?" And we discussed that the audience was gone by the time words were spoken, because the person who created it was trying to win an Academy Award or something. It was beautiful, right? It was well shot.
Great voiceover. Oh. It was an imitator, right? So it was a Morgan Freeman impersonator,
which
was well
Freeman.
Done. It wasn't perfect, but it was well done enough that people would remark on it.
And yet, it took them 25 seconds to say anything besides music and pictures. And we already knew that the audience would be down into maybe 15% of the audience at that point. And I know that we got access to the metrics. And once we got into the metrics, it just confirmed what we already knew.
Yeah, they'd lost like 32% of their viewers in the first 15 seconds. And then there was another massive drop off from there. And so it was like, they weren't even giving the video a shot. You can have a video where the message doesn't start for a while or where there is no words spoken ever and still hold people's attention. But you have to have some kind of a hook. And this video had no hook. Even the visuals, while they were pretty, you'd have to be really into mountains. Like, and that's all, like, you'd have to just love mountaintops because that's all that this video did for the first 22 seconds.
So we re-edited this thing for her. We actually took her, and please, when you hear us talking about this, don't be like, oh, we should reach out to Todd so he could resurrect somebody else's mess. Just know that this video didn't start with strategy, and because of that, it screwed the pooch from the very beginning. So we re-edited that thing and got significantly better results, which I know Marcus is going to talk about, because we started off from what is your goal? What are you trying to accomplish? Let's push that forward and start redoing this in a way that'll get people across your finish line.
Yeah, so ultimately, we were able to get 220% more people to take action on that video. And so
she's still there.
Right. She's still there.
We helped her save her job.
Well, and, you know, she's resurfaced for other projects now. She knows better at this point. So, but the big idea here is, you know, we had this case study, sort of tying it back to what is the value of a case study. Well, when we made our case study about this topic, what we discussed is the importance of the hook. Right? That's important. But it also gives us a really valuable context to discuss the difference between working with a video producer who is also in the marketing discipline or has that capacity, right? To align the video creative with the strategy and the execution. And so it gives us a perfect example to key in on that problem and alludes to what makes Wirebuzz different. The front-end strategy, the back-end execution of the creative. And so we're trying to shift the conversation and use that case study as an indoctrination piece. It's a way for people to align with our value proposition, but we don't have to be salesy. We're just talking about us. We're telling a story, and that story in and of itself is educational, but it does some really guerrilla footwork for us or legwork. Mm-hmm. Using case studies and testimonials. Testimonials are also a form of case study. It's a story that takes someone from a state of pain or desire to a state of resolution. It may not have all of the same numbers and, you know, that might not be quite step by step, but it serves the same function. And so thinking about case studies and testimonials as a guerrilla opportunity to overcome objections, in the words of a third-party endorsement from a customer, using it as an opportunity to indoctrinate people into your way of thinking about a problem or a solution. You can use it to pump up the value of something and make it more of a priority by amplifying the emotion that people have as it relates to the problem or the desire. So you can use these types of videos or content, well, you know, it could be written as well, where you are taking people on this kind of a journey, something that they value, but then you're also able to pump some of these sales messages into that content.
Now, when we're talking about you can use other types of content, it could be written. Just know that if you want people to get somewhere faster, use video. If you want them to get there and be more convincing, use video. If you want them to share it with more people, use video. But of course, all of these principles can be used with text-based content.
Yeah,
just not as efficiently.
Best practice, video at the top of your page, intro, podcast, right? If you're doing any kind of audio.
Right.
And then some text. You have all forms of content on that page so that people can consume it in whichever medium floats their boat.
Absolutely. Okay, so people like case studies because they feel actionable and they offer specifics that you don't get when people are simply discussing concepts at a really high level. Use them as that guerrilla tactic that Marcus had mentioned for handling objections and discussing how to solve very specific problems with your solutions. You know, this can be a holistic view of the impact on a company, or it can focus on a specific feature or even the benefits. Now, I also think, Marcus, you could possibly skip two rocks with one toss on this, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah. So if you feature a client in a case study, obviously a testimonial features a client, but if you're going to do a case study specifically and you can get that delivered by the customer who you achieve that result for, you have just 3 or 4x'd the efficacy of that content, because people who don't already have a really strong relationship with you. So if you say the first thing you do out of these seven tactics is go out and create a case study, I applaud that. But you're going to need to understand that the people who are on your list, the people who are in your audience, the people that you're talking to right now, they don't have a relationship with you yet. So they may not trust your case study or your testimonial unless it's delivered by that third party.
And so that's how we use helpful content to start off that relationship.
Right.
Right? That's kind of the beginning of it. That's showing our value and our impact on our information can have on your business. And before you know it, you're like, oh, those are good guys. We could trust them. And then you get into the case studies.
Right. And so one of the things that we love using case studies and testimonials for is like step two in an ad funnel, right? So you might have a video that tees up the problem that's only helpful, but it like establishes that problem. And then the second one might be a case study about how one of your customers solved that problem using your technology, your solution, whatever that might be. And then that gives you an opportunity to demonstrate credibility, to offer value, but then also you're positioning your product as the solution to those painful problems that you've established. So we love using case studies as part of ad campaigns. They are super powerful.
I think case studies are also super valuable in introduction pitch to new prospects.
Oh, yeah.
Because then they're like, oh, been there, done that.
Yeah,
they've done this, wow.
If you have a sales process and you have one of these videos, I would strongly encourage you to include some of the high notes of that case study in your presentation decks. But then
something
also
super digestible.
Super easy to digest, super easy for your sales team to run through without messing it up.
Yep.
But then follow up on those calls with the video, ideally of the customer talking through what you did for them, how it helped them, and what the benefits were to them or their business.
Now, the reason Marcus says of the customer is there is your prospect is going to be influenced most by peer-to-peer.
Right.
Okay. Their peer is another customer. It's not going to be somebody from your company talking about how great your services are as a testimonial. It's got to be peer-to-peer. That's where we get the influence from. If you're in the medical community or trying to persuade a physician, you're not going to have a patient talking to that physician. That isn't peer-to-peer. Instead, you want to have a really smart physician that's guiding and directing the case study because it resonates a lot deeper. And when you're talking about really smart, efficient strategies and marketing tactics, it all starts from looking at where you're going to generate the most influence. Now, we've already nailed the first three of the seven clever ways to inject your sales message into helpful content. Number four is about public service announcements, which is informing your market about a pressing issue and to use that as an opportunity to teach the underlying information that people need to value your solution. Give me a Wirebuzz example for the audience, Marcus. Like, how do we do this?
Well, we actually did a post a while back for one of our customer segments called the five biggest problems healthcare marketers face, and then in parentheses, and how to solve them. And that was a piece of content that we designed for ad campaigns, for prospecting and outreaching
in the health space, right?
Right, just in the health space, just with one of our customer segments. And the reason why we have a natural fit in the healthcare space is because there's a lack of attention. Everyone in that space is busy. It's one of the biggest growth industries in the world. And so there's a race, a bigger, more aggressive war for attention. And video has a very natural place in that market.
And the more competitive your industry is, the more you start to adopt the tactics that generate and yield the highest return.
Right.
Right? Like, so you wouldn't do this for something that was a small dollar sale. You'd do it for a bigger, more competitive product.
Right. Or if you were going to use it as part of an ad campaign, maybe, and you had a lower priced product, okay, you could do something like this. Actually, we have a client right now that we're working with on a Facebook ads campaign.
Will you do me a favor? You're going to mouth, will you just mouth who they are so I know who you're? Oh, yes. Okay.
It's a very, very difficult one to mouth the words to, because one of them is not a word.
Right.
So,
I don't like reading Marcus's lips. I just think it's awkward.
Well, you do know that I used to have a speech impediment, right?
But do you think that would pop in when I'm trying to read your lips?
No, but I do think that it might have an impact on the way that my mouth and tongue move when I'm speaking.
Are you diagnosed with a lip reading impediment? Or is it other people that would be diagnosed with it because it's on you?
Well, I do know that in the past, I went out on a date with a girl who was deaf, and she had a very hard time understanding me.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
So
that's where video comes in.
Right. So
closed captioning.
Yeah, the closed captioning. You need a transcript. It's essential.
All right. All right. So, sorry to take you off track, but we're talking about Wirebuzz examples on PSAs.
Right. So we were actually just working with a client on a Facebook ad campaign, and they have created a completely new type of product. That there is no competition, there is no market awareness around this type of solution, and in fact, there is no market awareness at all that the problem that they solve even exists.
Yeah.
But it's a very significant problem, and if you're able to solve it, the potential life impact is immense.
Yeah.
And so what we're doing with this client is obviously when you're going to be targeting people who aren't aware that they even have a problem, you can't hook them with the problem like you would in most industries. I mean, when we talk about creating an effective video for most of our clients, we use the problem as the hook.
Right.
Because then people are nodding along. They realize
it's
relevant.
Situation.
Right, exactly. So we had to create something that was helpful, that had a big promise, but that also gave us an opportunity, a forum where we have people's attention to teach them the background information, right? Like they need to know sort of what the problem is. And so what we did was we created a public service announcement on Facebook. And what this is going to do is we hook people with a desire, something that they want, right? Or a problem that they do identify with. And then we need to introduce the underlying problem. So here, what we would do is we would maybe spend the first 45 seconds to a minute of the video sort of addressing that promise, that value. But then we have to pivot and we have to teach the internal logic of how you solve that problem. And that's where you get to inject the internal logic, the link between the problem and your solution. But you're not being salesy yet. In that first video, you can't be salesy because then people's gloves come up and they're going to start blocking you.
Yeah.
And so you have to continue to offer value. You have to give people the DIY solution. Now, it just so happens with this particular client, the DIY solution, as we talk about very often, is hard, right? Effectively, their solution is you need to live like a caveman.
Right.
Living like a caveman is hard. It's not practical for people, especially the people in their market who can afford their product.
Right.
So we have the ability to teach and be completely helpful in this video, but we've established demand for an easy button solution.
Absolutely.
That's video two.
Okay, that's super cool. That's strategy number five, and that's introducing the real problem.
So yeah, actually, that was a good example that sort of bridges the public service announcement perspective, where you're introducing something that people need to be made aware of. But in this particular example, we also had to introduce the real underlying problem.
Mm-hmm.
So a classic example here for Wirebuzz would be, 20 business problems that can be solved by video. Right, so a lot of times people have these problems in their head. Now, in that case, we had a few real problems. Right, so there was the problems that the client could identify. Things like I am not getting people to open my first email, my prospecting email. So our pipeline is small. Right, that would be the problem that they might identify, or our sales cycles are too slow. But that's not the real problem. That's just the symptom of the real problem. The real problem is that you're not getting the attention of your target customers, which is really what we're talking about in this entire episode. But that's, if you have an attention problem, then you create valuable, helpful content, and you make sure that you use video to do that.
And you hack into that attention.
Right. And so we were introducing the real problem under the problem that's identified, and we use that to create a group of people who are warm. So we've offered value, we've shown them a path to solving their problems, but again, you're not being salesy yet, you're just introducing the real problem so that people can start the process of looking for the right solution.
All right, so that's strategy number five, which is to introduce the real problem. We gave you some really good practical ways to do it. If you want to get an example, you want to look at the 20 business problems that can be solved by video. We did a podcast episode.
Episode 45.
Yeah, episode 45. And you can access that by going to wirebuzz.com/45. Now, strategy number six is to teach them and to teach them your audience, your target prospect. We want you to teach them to DIY, to do it themselves. See how I did that? So,
you mean DIT?
DIT. You down with DIT? All right. So we want to teach them to DIY, right? And your product needs to be the solution to a complex problem. You need to be explaining why it works, showing them how to do it. But you also need to know that while you do it, you are not giving away your secret sauce. You agree with that?
That's the important thing, I think,
because
here.
They can't do it anyway.
Well, I don't think that it's necessarily don't give away your secret sauce. Mm. I think it's more of a matter of, yes, give away your secret sauce like we did in our ROI mini
course. I'm agreeing with you. And yeah. I might have said it wrong. What I'm really saying is don't worry about giving your secret sauce because they're not going to be able to do it anyway.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Now, so there's a caveat here which you sort of alluded to, which is you can't use this strategy if your solution, if what you're offering people is super simple. Right, like if you can, like if you're selling email copywriting services, and then you're putting up the email templates on your website,
not going to work.
It's not going to work because you just made it so your solution is not complex enough to teach someone to DIY and then have them still want to do it. Right, so you have to be a solution to a complex problem, preferably one where expertise, right? So you have been doing this for a while, and so there's a lot of tricks and learnings and insights that you're able to bring to bear on every new project. You need that kind of a context for teaching DIY. But we just talked about an example where we're working on a client's ad campaign where they are teaching how to get the benefits of their product without needing them. It's just really hard. And so they get to position themselves as the hack, as the quick way to get the benefits. Mm-hmm. This is extremely common in the supplement industry, in the weight loss industry, where people are creating a product that's designed to make it easier for you.
Mm-hmm. It's the easy button in a tablet.
Right. Or the other thing that you can do is if people can get 20% or 40% or 50% of the results when they DIY, but they can't get 100% of the results without your unique experience.
Okay, that works.
Right? So people might be able to get some of the value of creating their own YouTube videos and starting their own YouTube channel. But are they going to grow as quickly and get the same kind of impact as if they worked with a professional to do so?
No way.
Of course not.
Right?
But that doesn't, so the idea is that, yeah, you can teach the people who are inclined to do it themselves, how to do it themselves. But those aren't going to be your customers anyway.
Hey, I introduced you to my chef friend, right? We sat at his chef's table night.
Yeah.
And
it's the best meal I've ever had.
Yeah. Really quite phenomenal, right? So 100 years ago when I was working with him, and I might have been 23 years old, and just out of college.
Just 100 years ago?
Yeah, it wasn't
100. Wirebuzz is centenarian.
Jerk. So yeah, I was 23 once, and he made something that was just ridiculous. Guy, he was a former Food Network chef. He only makes ridiculous things. So I went up to him and I said, "Hey, chef, could I get the recipe for X, Y, and Z?" And he told me, and I wrote the whole thing down. And then 5 minutes later, a lady walked up to his chef's table and across the line where he was cooking and said, "Chef, I just had the same item that I just asked for. Could I get the recipe?" And he gave her a completely different recipe. And I called him out on it. And I was like, "Wait a minute. How the F did you just give her that recipe? It's completely different than the one you gave me." And he said, "Even if I gave you the exact recipe, you'd never be able to make it because you're pathetic."
That's totally him. Yes. He nailed it.
So that is, you want to teach people the DIY. You want to give them, be authentic about it. Don't hide all the ingredients because you already know they're not going to be able to do it at the same level of quality because you already have expertise, you've got the right equipment, you've got staff that's able to do it faster. All of those elements are added value that they won't be able to do on their own with DIY.
Right. And it's just really helpful to know. And I think there's a lot of hesitation around teaching people to DIY. It's just not as scary as you think. You're going to get way more customers than you're going to push away because they taught themselves how to do it. It's not a big problem.
Absolutely. And you also want to create a big net. So when you're showing people how to do things, they're like, damn, that dude can do that? That's really great. By the way, I always like to make sure that we water this podcast down to the most digestible level when possible. For those of you who are in your car, working out at the gym, listening to a podcast, that's how I ingest podcasts. If I'm using a term like DIY and it might be new to you, do it yourself, all right? So a company like Home Depot, which we've also laid out strategy and done work for, a big bulk of their business is geared towards DIY customers, do it yourself, where they're teaching people how to use these tools. So now I give you the acronym in the hopes that when you're driving, you don't have to Google it to figure out what the hell Marcus and Todd are talking about.
That's actually another really good example, like in cosmetics, in home improvement, home repair. All of those types of situations where your product is a part of the DIY solution and you can position your product in the solution that you're teaching. So like teaching people how to curl their eyelashes or whatever, but then you sell your eyelash curler, right? I mean, it's just like those are the types of things where you're creating valuable, helpful content, but then it's introducing your solution in context as a helpful solution, as part of a complete solution to the problem you've identified.
I got to tell you this story. When I was waiting table, same restaurant, I was serving champagne and I was pouring champagne on a champagne flute. And I'm one of those waiters back in the day that was so comfortable pouring champagne that I would pour the champagne like 2 feet above the flute and just drop it right in. And this lady's eyelash flew off onto the table right in front of the champagne flute. And I started laughing so hard that I forgot to turn off the champagne that I was pouring. And I just started laughing and I doused it across the tablecloth. Big mistake. All right. Strategy number seven should be don't eyelash. But the reality is strategy number seven here on how to inject your sales message into your helpful content is to tell the story of how you discovered your solution, right?
Oh, yeah.
And when you do that, really great things happen because other people that are your target customer are also going through that same problem.
Right. And it also has the advantage of making your expert relatable to your target customer. The more that you can make your lovable expert, your thought leader on staff, resonate and relatable to your intended customers, the more they're going to trust that person when they deliver information. Remember, we talked earlier about case studies and how if you haven't been creating helpful content in the past, you really need to get a customer on camera for that or a customer to create that content. Well, this is how you bridge the gap so that you're able to talk about what you've done and how you can help people without needing that third-party endorsement. So telling your story, making yourself relatable, continuing to deliver value over time, that's how you don't become reliant on third-party endorsements for your success.
I did something similar where I recently published a video on our Facebook page and on our on LinkedIn and on Twitter where I'm showing people how I solved a problem that I had. That problem was when I'm creating my own thought leadership videos, and 9 times out of 10, for the listeners, it's important you know that when I create our thought leadership videos, I like to do them on my own because I want to be the practitioner, right? And so sometimes my information needs to be explained in a very specific way, or my data has numbers, and it is a dyslexic person. Numbers just really isn't my big strong suit. So the way that I solve this problem is I use a teleprompter that's built, it's an app that's inside of my iPhone, right? So I created a video where I showed people how I solved that problem, and that video is done quite well. I'll put it on the show notes page for this episode, but what you really want to do is you want to tell the story of how you discovered your solution and then show it in action.
Right, and so this could be solutions to small problems that allude to the bigger problem that your solution, that your service, that your core offer solves. Or it could be a story of how you discovered a solution for top of funnel content because that story context is more captivating. You're going to maintain people's attention much longer And again, the act of listening to someone tell a story creates that resonance and relatability. So, but I think that there's a bigger utility here, which is figuring out how to use things like your homepage, your sales funnel, your email autoresponders, the videos or content that you're using in your ad funnels, and finding a place to inject the story of how you discovered your framework, your methodology, the big aha that your entire business is built around, right? And almost every business, unless you're like shamelessly the second comer to a market like Lyft, for example, like Lyft had no problem just being like, hey, we're just going to do what Uber did and just do it a little bit different.
Yeah, with a pink mustache.
Right, with a big pink mustache. So that's not a context where telling the story of how you discovered your solution makes sense.
Right.
It's like, well, we're a bunch of investors and we saw Uber and it was successful, so we did that.
Right.
Like, not going to resonate with people. But if you actually have a differentiated business where you have a unique angle, which most businesses do something different, and then that's what they use as sort of the bridge for why you should work with us. Okay, so here you need to tell the story of how you discovered that epiphany, that bridge, that thing that makes you unique. And for Wirebuzz, we did this in videos 1 and 2 in the ROI mini course, right? So you tell your story of how you started Wirebuzz, how you discovered video, and then you continue that story up to the point of how did we discover the framework, right? Because it didn't happen overnight. It developed over the course of years.
Trial and trial.
Right. And once we got to the point where we had this three-step framework, years and years of practice, years and years of implementation of videos for clients, we got to tell that story to catch people up on the Wirebuzz sort of journey, what right. we've done. And so now we're able to, yes, position you as the person who is an expert who discovered this framework, but also we have the opportunity to explain that framework, right? So you're using a story that creates tension and conflict so that you're capturing people's attention, and then you're bringing them through to resolution just like we always do, just like you see in movies. Like, think about your business like Star Wars, okay? So if you're the hero, What were the trials and tribulations along the way that made you learn and go from being, you know, Luke Skywalker on Tatooine to Luke Skywalker, the most powerful Jedi in the universe, right? You need to tell people, like, in a true story fashion. So this is not something that you can just get on camera and just sort of riff on your history, because we've seen on about pages, we've seen videos that do that. It doesn't work. People don't care about you. They care about the conflict of the story that they resonate with.
Mm-hmm.
This has to be done properly with a good storyteller.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, that's all really good. The example, if you want to get access to our ROI mini course, where we show you how to guarantee that your videos generate ROI, you can get access to that at wirebuzz.com/ROI. And just like Marcus mentioned, videos 1 and 2 of that mini course share the story, the backbone, and for teeing up the important concepts that marketers and salespeople need to understand before they can create or use videos effectively. And I think we did that very well. And you can see that we've 10x'd engagement from our audience. That should be an indicator that things are working quite effectively in that mini course. Great sample for you to look at. Now, I know as a under promise, over deliver, that we told the audience we're going to come up with 7 clever ways to inject your sales message into helpful content. But is there an 8th way? Can we go above and beyond?
Yes. And the bonus strategy for today is use your own business as an example. So think through the topics that we've discussed on today's episode, where we used Wirebuzz videos and content as an example, as a teaching lesson, to give you some ideas for how you can execute these strategies in the form of content for your business. But in doing so, we were able to talk about things like, you know, why video is valuable, right? It captures more attention. It delivers more emotion. We were able to talk about the importance of effective storytelling here just a moment ago. We were able to talk about how you can use testimonials and case studies to handle objections, to deliver value, to pump up the demand for your solution. We talked about how to use video courses multiple times. We addressed different ways that video courses can factor into the strategy. There's just so many different ways. We talked about ways that we are setting up Facebook ads for clients and the strategy behind that, demonstrating our expertise in this space. So you can use your business as an example, as a teaching platform, but also get that guerrilla benefit, that super ninja effect of being able to also continue to reinforce some of the value of your solutions, of your offers, of what makes you unique. And so we're constantly throughout this episode alluding to some of the values of working with Wirebuzz. And so that's another strategy you can use, is to self-reference historical examples and stories and content that you've done in the past in a new context. And then in doing so, you're able to continue that conversation, get more touch points, make it more likely that people who are following you are going to consume that essential message.
All right, so here's a quick overview, a recap of the 7 clever ways to inject your sales message into your helpful content. Marcus, the first one is the first strategy is splintering off pieces of your content quickly. What do people need to remember about that?
All right, so you have a promise for your core offer. You're going to take a part of that core offer, of the value that you're able to provide, and you're going to turn that into gated content that people have to exchange information for. And then you're going to splinter off more segments of that content offer for your top-of-funnel helpful content so that you can drive traffic to the lead magnet and then towards your offer.
Beautiful. Love it. Strategy number 2, create a mini course related to your offer like we've done, which you can see at wirebuzz.com/ROI. I don't think we need to go over that one. We've beaten that thing. Strategy number 3 are case studies. What do people need to remember about case studies?
So the critical thing here is that you don't just want to create a straightforward case study. You always can. That has some value. But the important thing is figuring out how to handle strategic objections or to focus on how you can transfer more emotion and value through that medium.
Okay.
So it's a guerrilla opportunity to inject other types of messages into a teaching framework.
All right. So strategy number 4 are public service announcements. And you want to inform your market about a pressing issue and use that as an opportunity to teach the underlying information that people need to value in order to get to your solution.
Right. That's exactly it.
Okay, so that one's good. Now, strategy number 5 is introduce the real problem. Marcus, talk to me briefly. Give me a couple sentences so I can remember strategy number 5 long-term.
Right. So the problem that your product solves may not be the problem that your customers have identified.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So you address the problems your customers have identified, and then you bridge the gap from that problem to the true problem so that they can then value your solution to the real problem.
You start off earlier than where your product starts.
Right.
Okay.
You have to create demand for your solution before you can present it.
Strategy number 6 is teach them to DIY. So I think it would be a good for Marcus. Give us a little high level on DIY.
Big idea here is that you teach people your repeatable framework for success in a specific discipline for a problem that your customers resonate with. Now, in order for this to work, keep in mind that your solution needs to require some level of expertise that you are uniquely positioned to provide. Because if they DIY, they won't get 100% of the benefits of your solution. But they can get some of them. You need to deliver the goods. You need to demonstrate that you know what you're doing so that they can get results. But at the end of the day, they're going to get better results with you, and you are the easy button.
Strategy number 7 is to tell the story of how you discovered your solution. The example is the Wirebuzz example. It's videos 1 and 2 of our mini course where we share this story, the backbone of how we went through this experience, what we learned, the pain along the way to figuring it out, because what you're doing is you're telling somebody a story, you're entertaining them with the story, but as they go through it, they're going to start seeing that there's a subtle sales message in it.
Right. So a classic example here is a lot of businesses, especially if they're not creating a new product category or entering a new market, they have improved on a system that has already existed, right? So product A has been around for 10 years, but it has a couple shortcomings or flaws. Product B comes out on the market and it resolves those issues. So in this context of this story, you can talk about how you discovered those shortcomings on the path to your epiphany and you're creating your new solution. That way you're poking holes in the existing solutions out there and creating demand for yours.
And the last one, the bonus one, is the bonus strategy is using your own business as an example, Marcus.
It's just a way to offer greater value by being more specific, giving people some food for thought, some ways to think about the material that you're delivering. But in doing so, in telling those stories, you also have a forum for re-delivering the value that those pieces of content or those stories or those concepts that you're discussing relate back to establishing demand for your product or service. So this will not work for every business, but when you have a forum where you can use results that you're able to provide your customers and then talk about your own business and how you were able to get those results for yourself, it gives you a really powerful forum for delivering some of those essential messages, but it seems very helpful. It doesn't seem like gloating. And that's the important thing, is you don't want to seem like, hey, look at me. I'm saying all these cool things. It's like, no, look, I'm going to help you do this. And I'm giving you this example so that you can better understand how to do it for yourself.
Awesome. All right. So those are the 7 clever ways that you can infuse your sales message into helpful content. And I want y'all to start using that, putting it to practice. Marcus Krieg, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
If you want to get access to the show notes page for this episode, well, all you have to do is go to wirebuzz.com/89, right? An easy way to remember 89. It's the way I always remember it. Look, in 1989, a series of revolutions took place in nearby Eastern Bloc countries like Poland and Hungary in particular. And it caused a chain reaction in East Germany that ultimately resulted in the demise of the wall, the Berlin Wall. And after a series of weeks of civil unrest, the East German government announced on November 9th, 1989, that all German citizens from East Germany could visit West Germany and West Berlin, and crowds of East Germans crossed and climbed the wall. And the two sides, East and West, were joined together. I remember it vividly. My stepdad was raised in Germany. We watched it on TV together. An easy way to get access to this information is to remember 89 and the Berlin Wall. Wirebuzz.com/89. Heyo, those are the big tips that we're giving you in this episode of Video Marketing Mastery. If you want to get access to, the podcast on a weekly basis, easiest way to do it is to go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, hit the subscribe button, and hit it hard. Leave a very honest rating and review, and by all means, we go through that. We look at it. It helps us make sure we're providing better information each and every episode, and make sure you tune in for the next episode where I break down the latest news in video marketing that masters like you absolutely need to know.